I'm Jill Dittmeyer, and this is Curious Mix. Listen in as we meet the people and explore the places and programs celebrating the arts and culture in our communities. Keep your ears open for these sounds and the stories behind them. In the world of odd jobs, creating and managing a haunted house could be at the top of the list. But believe it or not, haunted houses as Halloween attractions are big business. And if you want to be a success, you have to take your job very seriously. Gone are the days of just splashing around red paint and cobwebs and getting volunteers from the local high school to dress up and yell boo. The haunted house industry is global, and Indianapolis is home to several of the most popular and highly visited in the country. The House of Trepidation is more like live theater than an amusement. It offers sophisticated scenery, costumes, and makeup. Actors and people are hired to portray characters, and they're paid for their roles. The theme and flow of the experience is researched, written, perfected, and reviewed constantly to create the ultimate scare experience. I spent several nights with the Scream team at the House of Trepidation as it prepared for the upcoming Halloween season. Listen, if you dare.
Hey, guys.
Hey!
How you guys doing? Look around. This is your Scream team. This is the people you're going to be with for the, all the way through Halloween.
Half of them.
I'm lying. Statistics show 25% of you won't be here in Halloween.
My name's Ken Carter. I'm president of House of Trepidation Haunted House.
We're going to kind of go through some of what the job titles are and specifics and whatnot, but my role in the organization is attendance, ticketing, and social media. I'll introduce everybody else. I got Gaston Martinez, bald-headed guy. You're going to see him running around. He is 90% of his time spent in Crossroads. Bob Kurtz, he's the reason we're here.
Bob Kurtz, and I'm just the guy that makes things go boo. You know, I from the front door to the back door is my brain, I guess, or my. And I'm not demented. Don't think that away at all. But I'm the haunted house guy.
His 27th year is this year.
It's just fun to build, I guess you could say, the imagination aspects of it with the construction because, you know, everything you go through here and look at, well, most everything you go through here and look at is something I've done or something I've built.
You had Miss Kathleen in.
Kathleen Horrigan, Lawrence Central High School drama teacher. And I'm the producer at House of Trepidation.
And so, of course, she's going to be over the acting. She's going to talk to you towards the end of the presentation about acting and scare tactics and expectations, things like that.
We have wonderful actors that tell a story that weaves throughout the haunted house. And then also our scenery is amazing. It's not just sheets that are put up or like spiders on a rope. We really take a lot of time to when you first enter a room that you immediately feel where it's supposed to be. And then with the atmosphere of the music and the different sound effects that we'll have, it is a all senses type of thing. And then we have not a lot of blood and guts. It's more about the startle and your primal fears.
When you would go through a haunted house, you would either go through with a guide that would tell you a story, or they actually had banisters that would keep you out of the scenes. Well, to me, I thought, you know, well, why wouldn't you? You know, I want to immerse you into this. Why the proverbial security blanket of the banisters, you know, because if you're in between there, you know that the actor can only get so close to you before they have to stop. Well, I wanted to remove that security blanket.
We've got Miss Linda.
My name's Linda Carter. I am a general manager at Advanced Limousines, and then I come to the House of Trepidation to do makeup and costuming.
She's going to take the character role that's assigned to that position. She's going to find the makeup that fits with it. She's going to bleed those ideas over into her team. She's got three people behind her that are supporting her.
It's very important. We've spent a lot of time, a lot of hours, a lot of heart, sweat, and tears into making our haunted house be very detail-oriented. So everything has to match every room.
So our haunted house is not the typical blood and gore type haunt. It carries a very strict storyline, and every position has a personality and a biography. So they actually have a character that the actor is actually living. And so they read the bio, and they understand the purpose in that position and what the reason is and what part they play in the story.
It is a theater. We run it kind of like that, which is why I'm here, you know, and why we have the dress rehearsal and we have the first meeting, the kind of the cast meeting and that type of thing. They get into hair and makeup, costume, and then they become the characters.
All right. You got a feel for it?
We travel. We go to all the seminars and all of the conventions and stuff and see what's happening on the other side of the country.
There's a gentleman named Leonard Pickle that is sort of the godfather of haunted houses, and we went with him, and we went especially to New Orleans. There's some fabulous ones down there, up in Michigan, and over in Ohio, and we looked at what made these the top 25 in the nation, some of them, and we saw how they worked behind the scenes, how they worked with their employees, what made employees want to come back, what made them want to continue to do this.
House of Trepidation, Crossroads of Carnage, and Purgatory are the individual attractions within this building.
Haunt 1 is the home of Dr. Bell, okay? That's where all the bodies are housed of the people that he experimented on. And they are stuffed in the walls. So keep that in mind. If you're in Haunt 1, that's what you are.
Welcome to the House of Trepidation. We are now standing inside of Dr. Bell's house. Isn't it lovely?
Yeah.
I said, isn't it lovely? Yeah.
Wonderful. Beautiful.
I say doctor in the very loosest sense, because you see, he's no medical training whatsoever. He just loves experimenting on his patients.
Haunt 2, Crossroads of Carnage, is the lab, the medical room where he did operations, where he burned the bodies, all of that, where the zombies live.
So I'm going to count to three, and when I say three, I'm going to start spraying the airbrush. So you're not going to want to breathe in just because it kind of smells strong. My name is Molly. I've worked at Trepidation for, this is my third year, so 2 years before this. I've done makeup all 3 years. And I scared the first year, but I don't scare anymore, just because it was a lot of work and I don't like it. I'm not very scary. You're gonna be a mad scientist. The makeup that I'm doing is gonna kind of look like there was like a mad explosion.
Oh.
Like, and so you're gonna have the goggles like in your hair.
It'll look like something exploded and I took them off.
And you took your goggles off. Yeah, that's basically like what I'm going for with this look, I guess.
Haunt 3, Purgatory, is where all the nightmares of all the people that he murdered are housed. That's where you face your fears. So that's why we have the clown room, the doll room, when claustrophobia, all that type of thing. Those are the fears that a lot of people have, bugs. So keep that in mind when you move into the three different haunts, that we have a story behind each of them.
So we bring in about 80 to 100 actors, and we want them to have an amazing time. And I think we're so successful in that area because there's a lot of thought that goes into it, and we understand that the personality and the character of the actor makes or breaks the show.
I'm looking for people that can, within seconds, maybe scare you. They cannot be intimidated. I have them do different scenarios to see if they can act like a zombie. How loud can they scream? How loud can they yell? And I'm willing to take people that have never worked in a place before because we're here to train them, just like we're doing tonight. You know, we want to take them through and teach them how to scare because there's definitely an art to it.
Okay, you have to practice. You want to look at the peephole. Okay, here's the peephole right here. You want to look to see when people are coming. You're going to hit the middle, all right?
I'm giving this away. If you are a person that's going to be going through a haunted house, don't listen to this. But we want to aim for the middle of a group. So when a group is going through, usually the philosophy is the first person going through is going to be the bravest, and the last person going through will probably be the second bravest, or vice versa, because the scared person doesn't want to go first. They're hoping, you know, well, we'll shield in between. Plus, with that, you're going ahead and you're going to get the entire group. So if you just get the beginning, everybody behind, miss that scare. And, you know, grown men will grab their girlfriends or wives, whatever, and throw it in front of them when they, because they get startled as well. We've had people run out of rooms before because they've been so scared, and it's really interesting to see that. So we try to teach them how to do that and make it work.
Now remember, stay very close together, be very brave, and walk this way. Good luck to you.
If trepidation is rocking, it's because of you. If our ratings are climbing, it's because of you. It's our house, but it's your show.
But when you learn how to scare, it is a high, and you will love it. Right? Those of you that have been here before?
Yes. Right.
You know what I'm talking about. There are several people that have worked for us several times. So please, please, please keep that in mind. If you want to keep that position, show us what you can do. If you're having trouble, ask us. So with that in mind, after I'm done with this and KJ's done and everybody else, we're going to take you on a tour. But if you've never scared before, then meet me right back here and we're going to talk about how to scare people. But that will be this, right after this, if you've never scared before.
The person that's running the room hangs out in this particular portal. There can be two, upwards of three people in this, if it's a really busy night and we got lots of people. But they're going to be wearing masks just like this. The black light charges the mask. Then somebody that's in here would go through and not shock themselves and hit the switch. And then the masks still glow. And this is the last room in this one. And there's the exit. All right? All right. Any questions, comments, concerns,
answer
my thoughts about
life? Name's Brendan Steele. I'm here from Indiana. I actually live in Franklin Township. And I haunted at the Barn of Terror for 2 or 3 years. So I'm just excited to be here to do some of that again.
And why do you like to do a haunt?
I mean, honestly, I just like to scare people, you know, get them to come through the group, identify the people that are going to jump, and then scare them, you know, to the highest effect.
So I'm Christopher West. I'm an Indianapolis native, and I've done shows with Footlight and the Civic Theater.
And who are you?
I'm the Poltergeist. I'm the one that goes bump in the night and comes at you from out of the blue, I suppose.
Why do you like doing this type of a haunt?
I get fun from it. Like, seeing people's reaction just like a high that I can't explain. It's fun. Like, I look forward to it all year long. I'm getting paid to scare people, so you can't beat that.
Doll ladies, you're going to have to team up, okay? Okay, the play with me could be one thing that you do, and then you turn into the demon child. I know you know how to crawl.
My name is Erin Weller, and I am from Indianapolis, Indiana. This is my first time. I thought it'd be a lot of fun and a good experience, and I'm in theater with Kathleen Horgan at Lawrence Central High School, and it just sounded like a lot of fun.
My name is Jeremy Hatcher, and I'm from Indianapolis, Indiana.
Have you ever done a haunted house before?
No, this is my first time.
Why? Why are you here?
Kathleen Horgan is my drama teacher, and she suggested that I tried it out, you know, to open my acting skills up to different fields, I guess.
Staying in character at all times is super important. We use the Disney method, which means anytime you're out in public, even if you're going to the restroom, if you're going on break, if you're out in the parking lot and you are dressed, you are that character. So you walk like them, you interact like them. If you're going out to your car in between, like for some reason you absolutely have to have something to eat and you want to get a hot dog, then you're going to go out in character and you're going to talk to the people while you're out there. Okay, or you're going to not... You're going to be that zombie getting a hot dog. But you're not going to eat the hot dog out there. Okay? So keep that in mind. You are always, always, always in character. If I catch you out of character, I'm probably not going to be using you again.
My name is Nathan Terhune, and I'm from Indianapolis, Indiana. I've helped out with building the Children's Museum Haunted House in the past.
How do you think being a participant versus being a builder is going to be for you?
From a builder's perspective, you can see like how things work and what things do what before you walk into the room. And then when you're an actor and you're actually working them, it's from a whole different perspective. And you find different ways to make them work, maybe better than some other people if you have that background.
Becky Sinkovic, Indianapolis. When you come here and when you scare a person and when they like scream, like when you can tell that they're terrified, it's like a satisfaction feeling that you get, like a rush of adrenaline, and it just makes you feel good to just scare the crap out of people.
I can tell you, when I worked my first haunted house, I was 14 years old, and that first group of four girls come around the corner, I was in the gymnasium of a school, and they fell on the floor, I knew I was a haunter.
Once you understand what it's like to scare people and take out those aggressions that you've had at your other work job, or, you know, you're frustrated with your family, whatever, you can, nobody knows who you are behind that mask or that makeup, and you can come out and scare them, and you don't get in trouble for it, and they love it.
You have come on a very special night. Tonight there are hundreds of twisted and tortured souls inside who are just dying to meet you all.
You know, you come up with an idea, and it is so far-fetched and so stupid, you tell each other, and then it's like the next day, all of a sudden, they're going, well, that won't work, but I think if we did this, that might work. See how it just grows, and it grows, and it grows, and then it becomes House of Trepidation.
Still to come on Curious Mix, Hidden Treasures.
True love is just about understanding how beautiful you are, how capable you are, how connected you are to every force, you know, that came together to create you.
Untapped talents.
In his own way, a towering figure, not simply someone who supports an agenda.
I'm Jill Dittmeyer, and you're listening to Curious Mix. I'm Jill Dittmeyer, and you're listening to Curious Mix. This week, our DIY artist is making it by creating art to profile famous and influential people. WFYI's Melissa Davis takes us to Justin Brown's studio, where he creates a collage of pictures and words in the style and size of a concert poster.
My name is Justin Brown, and I am making intelligence art. I'm making intelligence art because I am fascinated with data collection and intelligence gathering, and the intelligence community seems to be pretty prevalent right now and on topic, so I'm just exploring that subject as much as I can.
Gotcha.
We're here in my living room, listening to Pharoah Saunders' Heart is a Melody, hanging out with my roommate's dog, Diamond, this beautiful gray pit bull, talking about my art practice.
I'm about to work on this Truman Capote FBI piece. Most of his, or at least what I printed out, is about his participation in his founding of the Fair Play for Cuba Committee.
Truman Capote is a famous novelist. He wrote Breakfast at Tiffany's and In Cold Blood. Justin shows me printed FBI files scattered across a table, some on the floor, maybe more than 100.
Apologize for the mess. Look at my... I guess it's kind of like the studio kind of looks like my brain, because everything's out and disheveled, but I need to be able to see it. And yeah, so I typically just start with the first layer of the files, and we'll put them on with my adhesive.
How does place factor into your art?
Place factors into my art. Indianapolis has a larger intelligence community than it's necessarily aware of. You know, Indianapolis also has a sort of an esoteric history of being named after the moon goddess Diana. And I always like to look into or tie together the esoteric histories and angles of different cities
He rips pages into small pieces, different sizes, wants to keep the language readable. He'll blend these with pictures, frame them, and spray paint the frame.
Like, I've always liked language, so in my practice, it's more about the layout of the files, and I don't know if people necessarily appreciate that. So there's like funny little poems in a lot of the work from before and little snippets. I've always been fascinated with how the government wastes a lot of money, spending a lot of time, sending a lot of people to investigate people that are just writers or thinkers or just want basic democracy practice. I'm just spreading the glue or the adhesive across the, the paper background that I'm going to cover up. Most of my frames are repurposed from a neighborhood place that clears out hotels. So I've been really blessed. Honestly, or fortunate, excuse me. I've been really, really fortunate to develop a relationship with them because they recognized that I was a poorer artist, and they do a really good job of taking care of me.
How do you feel about the art scene in Indianapolis right now?
I feel hopeful for the art scene in Indianapolis right now. I feel inspired by a segment of the art scene that is kind of out of the loop, or not necessarily out of the loop, but just not a part of the institutions.
Justin arranges the ripped papers in a frame. He doesn't paint the frame until he's done, and the paint gets on the collage.
And I also don't spray or paint the frame until I'm done, and it always overlaps with the work because I like that. I think most art tries to be too neat, I guess, and I just wanted to keep the messy aspect of stuff but still do it in a technically professional way, or finer way. But I also like that everything that I work in has the title Security Matter. And it's really funny seeing Truman Capote referred to as a security matter, or James Baldwin, who left the country for a bulk of his life, a security matter, or I don't know anybody really that's on here, because nobody that I show or I've worked on yet has had any sort of like actual violence or, yeah, the Elvis piece is just sarcastically about his correspondence with the FBI because he really wanted to meet J. Edgar Hoover.
What keeps you going with your art?
What keeps me going with my art is having chose intelligence as a subject matter. It's always expanding, and it's always growing, and it's never ending. So I'm only halfway through the people that I've identified on, like the surveillance list from the 60s and 70s and 80s. The fact that there's a lot more to be pieced together and a lot more dots to be connected. Adding the top layer, which is the picture of the subject that's been surveilled. And this one is Truman Capote, smoking a cigarette and a bow tie.
He adds the picture.
Holding his chest.
Just one almost life-size picture of Truman Capote's head, neck, and shoulders in the middle of the frame.
It's actually okay.
A collage of writing from Capote's FBI file surrounds it.
I guess I should also mention my work isn't perfectly flat on purpose. When most people are used to seeing collages, they're used to seeing something nice and tidy and neat. And as more of an expressionist street artist, I don't necessarily like that. So don't expect it to be too cute, but it should still be meaningful. And then I'll put it outside to dry for a while. Typically do all my spraying out on the front porch. It's the best ventilated place. I used to do it inside back when I was younger, but I've learned to stop that and get rid of my hubris and not let my practice hurt me so much. So, yeah.
Justin says it takes him anywhere from an hour to 8 hours to make a piece. At this point in this one, it's been about an hour.
And now I'm spraying my frame. I'm spraying gold 18 karat spray paint on my frame right now, and a little bit on the actual work. I chose gold because for two reasons. One, the royalty aspect concept that came from Jean-Michel Basquiat's artwork. Also, part of it is like, you know, it's one of the first precious metals that people were killed for and colonized for, and yeah, so I like to use it.
The book, The Improbable Wendell Willkie, tells the story of the Indiana-born businessman-turned-politician who challenged FDR for the presidency in 1940. Curious Mix contributor Matt Pelzer recently spoke with the book's Pulitzer Prize-winning author, David Levering Lewis.
What made you decide to write a book on Wendell Willkie?
I was researching another book many years ago, completely unrelated, but I came across a letter from Wendell Willkie to Walter White, head of the NAACP. And it said, you know, you gave me a wonderful party, and I know people think that I'm downhearted, that I'm a defeated man. No, he said, it's men like you who understand what I stand for that encourage me. And I thought, what an interesting missive. And I kept that in mind and then discovered, indeed, that Walter White in his biography said that this was one of the closest friendships of his professional life. And I then said, well, this is really intriguing combination, only to find, in fact, that Willkie and Walter White developed a strategy for changing the way in which people of color were presented by Hollywood, this enormously effective medium that spoke so effectively for what American values really were, but when it came to people of color, tended to surrender to the veto of the white South and to swerve into demeaning things.
I remember back in 2016 when now President Trump was gaining momentum as the Republican candidate, hearing comparisons to Wendell Willkie. You know, the fact that he's a businessman, a political outsider, a bit of a populist, and the fact that he was changing the party, so to speak. And so I took that comparison when I heard it. I took it to heart, having not known much about Wendell Willkie. But now that I've read the book, I've learned that that's about where the comparison ends. Wendell Willkie was, in fact, a very different candidate.
Yes, I think you would have to say that the president who occupies the White House now is the anti-Willkie, really. There were certainly similarities. Both were successful businessmen. Both had never held elective office. And both were really not particularly interested in politics at first, except to make politics work for their own interests. And, of course, they both, as they found themselves engaged in politics, changed their official political affiliations. Those were the objective similarities. The consequences of a Wendell Willkie being elected president would, I think, have been really quite different and quite positive. I would have to say that the consequences of a Trump presidency still working themselves out in the course of history. Wendell believed, however, that partisanship, though important, had to abide by its larger responsibility, which was to oppose and to criticize, but to do so in the service of consensus and of the commonwealth, of a better nation. We know that, of course, he was not elected. Defeated, Wendell Willkie spoke on the three national networks to introduce a concept of loyal opposition, said he, our party is a great party. It's a party that has great principles, but it honors its principles and honors the party and its partisanship only insofar as it's beneficial to the Commonwealth as a whole. We must not criticize simply for the sake of criticism. We must criticize for the sake of the nation. Now, that seems commonsensical. It did to him then. In today's political climate, collaboration and criticism have a very different meaning and function.
What was interesting to me was that even though Wilkie and FDR butted heads privately and in public, after Wilkie's untimely death in 1944, FDR said that Wilkie, even though he had faced him once in an election and almost twice, said he was, quote, a godsend to this country when we needed him most. You don't hear that kind of thing these days.
You don't hear such an accolade. But it was absolutely true. The country might well, under the leadership of a different leadership, it would have stood by and watched a Hitlerian Europe consolidate. And the British perhaps would have had to throw in the towel. Who knows what the narrative might have been. And so Wilkie was absolutely central to that. But he's also, in his own way, a towering figure, not simply someone who supports an agenda that FDR advocated. To what are we fighting for, Wilkie wanted to make clear. Those principles, Wilkie felt, had to be embedded in the process of the war and the institutions that were to follow.
Still to come on Curious Mix, words.
Yeah, my Tamil is different language, maybe 5-6 different language.
And wonders.
A slow going forward is staying very still. That is you. Speechless creation that leaves me finally speechless.
I'm Jill Dittmeyer, and you're listening to Curious Mix. I'm Jill Dittmeyer, and you're listening to Curious Mix. Indianapolis singer-songwriter Yadin Cole has a new single called True Love. Curious Mix contributor Kyle Long talks with the artist about his debut album and his five favorite songs.
True Love is about liberation. It's about internal freedom, and it's about the essence of true love, which really comes from within oneself. So I just see a lot of division and separation when I look into the world, and a lot of mechanisms which are really meant to dumb us down and make us think less of ourselves. And we look to so many things within the outside world to confirm our sense of self-worth, you know. But I realized just from personal experience that you can't do that, because you're not going to be able to count on people and things to keep you happy. True love is just about understanding how beautiful you are, how capable you are, how connected you are to every force, you know, that came together to create you.
What is beauty? Is it the color of your skin? Is it the clothes you wear? Or is it the light that lives within? And what is love when it's so hard to find? There's so much pain, and people can't find the words to say.
And the single is available on iTunes and Spotify.
Yep, and anywhere you can find music.
Yeah, and folks can check out all your work at yadincolemusic.com.
Yep, yadincolemusic.com.
And Yadin, you were kind enough to pick out five songs to share with us today. Are these five favorite songs, influential songs?
Kind of a mixture of favorites and things that are just really influential to me, like right in this moment.
Yeah. What's your first song?
My first song is Jammin' by Marley. And he was one of the artists that really inspired me to not only pick up the guitar, but to really like be conscious about what I'm putting into my music as far as my messages. So definitely Jammin' by Bob Marley.
We're jamming. I wanna
jamming with you. We're jamming, jamming. And I hope you like jamming too. Ain't no rules, ain't no vow. We can do it anyhow. I and I will see you through. Cause every day we pay the price. We're the living sacrifice. We jamming till the jam is through. We're jamming. To think the jamming was a thing of the past.
The Waters by Anderson .Paak and DJ the Chicago Kid is an amazing song. Anderson .Paak is an amazing artist. He plays like so many instruments, man. He raps, he sings.
Incredible.
Like, you can't beat it, you know?
Yeah. Tried to tell Nick in 2012, Nick. Working hand to hand and no avail. Volume 1 was too heavy for you frail, Nick. So I got lean like codeine and pills. It's the visionary in the vintage Chevy. It's been a while, but wow, you still care. Free Nash till they pass out obituaries and bold caps. Your was not there. And I could do anything but move backwards. The hardest thing is to keep from being distracted. My big sister still claiming me on the taxes. Tell Uncle Sam I just need a second to add this. Gave my mama 10 racks and she packed and went to chew mash with it. Could triple the worth and gave me half of it. Half of it I tucked in the back of the air mattress. A quarter stash was stashed in the box with the Air Maxes. The rest got lost in sacks with my wife in no being.
Number 3 is Valerie's cover by Amy Winehouse. She's one of my favorite vocalists and inspirations as a vocalist, especially just with the spirit, you know, and the uniqueness of her voice. She really just brought something special to the table. And I love Amy Winehouse, man.
Well, sometimes I go out by myself and I look across the water and I think of all the things, what you're doing. And in my head I paint a picture. Well, since I come home, well, my body's been a mess. And I miss your tender head and the way you like the jaggers. Won't you come on over? Stop making a fool out of me. Why don't you come on over, Valerie?
My last two really influential songs are actually from local artists, Indianapolis-based artists. One is called No Copy by AA, featuring Willis and Baby Ebony. And that song is just something that I play probably like once a day, man, I'm telling you. It's just really uplifting for me.
I know the squad got me. I know that God got me. Man, I just killed his shit. I feel like John Gotti. I feel like King Cole went bankrupt and make no copy. I done been show-stopping. So there ain't no stopping. I know the squad got me. God got me, man. I just hate you. I feel like John Gotti. I feel like King Cole went bankrupt and make no copy. I done been show stopping.
And then one of my favorite artists in the city is Kaiwa the Artist, and his song Black Child on his album Black Child is something that I listen to often just for inspiration. And it just it's a dope song, man. Making great music out here in Indy.
Black child, black child. Let me tell you what these people think. It's either they against what it is that your people do, or they just want to see your peeps erase. So take a leap of faith and try to land in a place that's good. And it ain't the hood. Cause see that neighborhood is just another way they break us. Could you please go and try to gain an education? Cause remember, black child, you gotta go and be a leader. Make a plan, be strategic, and lead these thoughts, and that's up for them freedom we need. You. Black child, black child, black child. We need you. Black child, black child, black child.
How does a poem inspire a visual artist? Like this. Here's Curious Mix contributor Terry Border.
I have a thing for snails for some reason. Maybe it's one of the few things I can draw. Because you start with a little spiral, and then you can... if you could draw the shell and you draw a little lumpy flesh with antenna, and there's the snail, and you're done with it. And we have snails in our yard since we have a pond now. Seems like a lot more snails nowadays. We have snails inside the pond eating the algae, which got me thinking about what kind of poems out there are for are for or about snails. And I found one by Elizabeth Spires, and I wanted to share it with you. It's called Snail. I watch you traverse the long green table. Your trail, slick and shiny, then pluck you up and hold you, wet and glistening in my open hand. You are a dusky brown, your mottled shell, attached by a wrinkled skin-like mantle to the rest of you. Touched, your eyes on long tentacles retract. You have two shorter lower tentacles that feel the ground in front of you. First one, then the other, up and down. Carefully they touch the ground. Like someone feeling her way along a pitch-black corridor with no way of knowing where she is going. Like me, perhaps. Your radula, ragged black mouth hole with tiny teeth, tears up and chews chalk and lettuce. That's all you need, chalk and lettuce. For you, there is no fight or flight. Startled, you contract into your shell and wait for danger to tire and walk away. A slow going forward is staying very still. That is you. Speechless creation that leaves me finally speechless. Sometimes I cannot bear the world, the beauty and perfection of a snail, created by the same creator who created me. But we are different. You are lowly and humble. You have grace and compression. Whereas I am awkward and huge and not humble, forgive me. Do you see me? Is the world seen from your wary, waving eye stalks a perfect circle? You see ahead and behind you a thing I cannot do. Do you, too, feel terror? I, monster that I am, bow down before you.
Now, do you like to eat snails?
Yeah, I have two. I have two. I'm not sure if I cared for them. Do you like them? Do you enjoy them?
With a lot of garlic and a lot of butter.
Is that the secret?
Not with a conversation like the poet had with it.
Well, you know what I think is funny is the contrast between snails and slugs. I mean, snails, I think, are with shells are beautiful. But as soon as there is a slug, no shell, it becomes one of the ugliest, grossest things I've ever seen. They're just problems that I don't want around.
They didn't dress properly, so they're not getting respect.
Maybe that's, yes. Yeah, there's none of the slimy part of them that are hidden in any way.
That's Terry Border. He'll be back again next week with another poem to help us get out of our shell. Almost 20 years ago, parishioners from the Faith Church in Nora were out canvassing their community when they met a group of Turkish immigrants. None of them could speak English and were having a difficult time navigating the American system. The church decided to start an English language class, and today it offers a thriving outreach program for immigrants and refugees from numerous countries. Curious Mix contributor Bob Williams spent time in class with some of the church's students and teachers.
That's hello in over a half dozen languages. In this one classroom, there are a dozen people from a handful of different nations, all yearning to breathe free.
You know how to speak English, you can go to the store by yourself. I can go ask somebody, they can talk to me. Before that, I don't know what to do, I don't know how to say. And then, you know, I don't know how to ask, where is the bathroom? And then I had to hold everything. Yeah.
She laughs about it now, but Nikki escaped from Burma a few years ago. Literally escaped when marauding soldiers raided her village. She fled into the jungle with her children and the clothes on her back.
We go through the jungle and through the river like 3 days and 3 nights.
Nebia is one of the lucky ones. She escaped the civil war in Eritrea.
I came in the U.S. before, it's very hard life, but now it's good. English class,
It's very, very, it's good. For me and for another people, it's different culture, different language student in here.
Have you learned other languages besides English?
Yes.
I would think that would be pretty easy to do, sitting at a table with people from everywhere.
Yeah, my table is different language, maybe 5-6 different language.
After you learned English and you were more comfortable with the language, how much easier was it for you to even get a job?
It's easy, yeah. Before it's very, very hard, but now it's easy. Because now I go to shopping myself. I go to hospital for my son appointment. I understand with doctor, with nurse, everything. God is good.
A relative newcomer to Indiana is Ivan from Venezuela. He now does janitorial duties to make enough money to send home to his sister so she can get her cancer medicine. The family must go to Colombia because the meds aren't available.
Tengo en Indianapolis 2 años, precisamente.
He's been here 2 years, and he had trouble entering the country, and so he was held for 2 months before he was able to enter.
How are the classes helping you?
Okay, primero es una limitante bastante.
He studied English in high school in Venezuela, but that's been a long time. and now he wants to learn. So it's important to. He understands how important it is to learn it as the native language in this country, and he wants to learn it. In Venezuela, he worked in medicine, and he was also a college professor. And now, because he doesn't know the language, and they're still working through the legality of getting legal papers, he can only do menial jobs like cleaning and labor kind of work.
The movers and shakers of this outreach are equally determined to continue the work of this program as those in it are determined to learn the language.
My name is Amy, and I'm assistant director.
My name is Anna, and I'm the administrator.
And I'm Sally, and I'm the current director of Faith International English Classes.
In 5 years, I hope we're still loving the people. We've always been a group that comes together and welcomes people made in the image of God and respects them and values them. And I hope that's where we'll be. The methods might change, and maybe the countries people are coming from shift a little bit, and we meet people from different countries, but I hope we're still here loving the people.
And as you tell me that, there are tears running down your face. So this is an emotional mission for you.
All three of us are very emotionally vested. But I think that all of our teachers and our conversation facilitators are too. They can all tell you stories.
So many of these refugees have come out of the most horrible conditions you can imagine. They've had people come to their houses or their huts at gunpoint, wanting to kill them and their whole family, and they've had to take their small children and whatever they could carry and literally run through the jungle. Some of them have had babies in the jungle. Some of them have lived for a whole year taking care of a small child in the jungle to get away from the people that were trying to kill them, only to live in a refugee camp for years before they could come here. Some have had their houses bombed. Some of them have had their loved ones or their friends killed in front of them. I just heard of a man who had to go to the coroner's office and identify his brother, and he couldn't recognize him because the top of his head was missing. Just the most horrific things that you can imagine is what these people have come through. They just want to live. They want a better life for their children, and they're just people just like us, and they didn't deserve to go through those things. And we just want to love them and welcome them here so that they can start a new life, have a new life for their children.
That's the goal, to change this into this.
Hello, how are you?
This is Bob Williams for Curious Mix.
Brandon Meeks composed and performs our music. And this curious mix was created by
Roxana Caldwell,
Kyle Long,
Terry Border,
Melissa Davis,
Sarah Neil Estes,
Matt Pelser,
Abby Terzini,
Bob Williams,
and me, Jill Dittmeyer. We'll be back again next week with more Curious Mix.